And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Brian.
You're in a funny mood today.
Thank you.
Let's just jump right into it. Our top story is a continuation of last week's big news item, which is ASP.NET being open sourced.
So our friend Brady Gaster interviewing Scott Hanselman.
Also our friend, just to clarify.
Yes, live via satellite, special satellite truck just for Hanselman. And this is really a discussion of what's going on with open sourcing ASP.NET. So Scott goes through some of the differences where, say, for example, like the example he gives is actually a really good one, MVC1, where we would open source it, mm-hmm. but it wouldn't be open development.
Right.
What he means by that is, hey, we'd work on an internal TFS, and every now and then we'd release bits. Now what you're talking about from an open development is the devs on the team are checking directly into the source tree, right, on CodePlex.
Right, and with contributions
from the community.
The community. Yeah.
So that I think those are two big differences and welcome differences, I think, from the community, from the ASP.NET team.
Right. Yeah, so it's really cool. It's nice to have Scott break this down, and it's an interesting model. I'm not aware of any other team at Microsoft that has done this. Are you?
Certainly open sourcing stuff, yeah, for sure.
Oh, open source, but open source with contributions.
Orchard, I think.
Oh, okay. But part of the same team.
Wix.
Wix. But Wix is, I think Wix is strictly like an outside personal effort. I don't think it's something that is officially supported.
Somebody said this is the first time, and then people came up with 12 different examples of where people have been open sourcing. Certainly
so
coding for fun projects.
Sometimes.
Coding for fun projects all the time. I mean, where do you draw the line? I'm telling you what people are saying.
All right.
I'm just a Twitter regurgitator.
Okay. Got it. Moving right along. So the 2012 scripting games are here.
Yes.
Just in time. I'm not sure which city is hosting this year.
Yes, Barcelona.
This is cool. Now, typically people may know that we're kind of anti-contest because there's just so many contests.
Too many contests.
We don't have time to cover every single contest.
We want to cover the best contests.
We want to cover the best contests. And what makes this contest unique, it's first of all, it's a PowerShell scripting contest. So you can compete and write some PowerShell scripts and potentially win some money. I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what's at stake. But what's really interesting here is that they'll also do a critique of your PowerShell scripting. So you can learn from some of the experts at Microsoft
right.
and elsewhere about how to improve your PowerShell script commands, which is kind of like a free code review.
Yeah, it is. I think that's some of the unique aspects of it. And, you know, I think one of the reasons why I'm kind of anti-contest is because people use, like, literally would use the same app and just submit it to different contests.
Right.
Oh, yeah, look, we added Azure
or
something like that.
Right.
So this having it be like, hey, we're going to give you a challenge, and you have to write a PowerShell script that does this,
yep.
I think is a great sort of premise.
Yeah, so that's really cool. And then moving right along to NuGet PowerShell, using NuGet PowerShell to replace missing macros. So this is interesting. People may not be aware of the fact that macros are now no longer in Visual Studio 11, but apparently using PowerShell, John Robbins shows how you can get around that.
Yeah, so John Robbins, a lot of people know as being sort of a classic deep level person in terms of debugging,
mm-hmm.
And debugging applications and how Windows debugging works, .NET Framework debugging does, and so on. And some of the things that he does is actually have macros that assist with debugging. So since he has a number of these, you know, his goal was to make sure that he can still have the same behavior.
Mm.
And like, hey, here's some things that will help automate, say, for example, you know, maybe it's dumping something out to a log file so that you're capturing information, whatever the example happens
right.
to be. So he's been able to actually use PowerShell to be able to do this and actually call into the interface. And you can read his full post on how he actually goes about doing it
right.
to interface with Visual
so
Studio.
So in Dev 10, where he would have used macros, he's now using PowerShell to do the same or similar things.
Yeah, it's the same things, yeah.
Okay, got it. Cool, well, that's good. And then a lot of people may not know this yet because I don't think it's available publicly, but MSDN subscribers can start downloading a update. It's the April 2012 update to the Visual Studio 11 beta. And so this includes a lot of fit and finish features, some crashes, some stability, it introduces a few small fit and finish features, but for the most part, this is focused on performance and reliability.
So VS11 beta, April 2012 update. Mm-hmm. If you're using VS11 beta, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah, this is
now, does it break anything else?
It was not supposed to. If it does, it's a bug.
Okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So read the readme, just make sure that it, you know, there isn't anything that if your particular scenario or setup, there's something weird going on.
That's right. My understanding is it should be coming soon to the public if you're not an MSDN subscriber, but I don't have the dates on that.
Okay, yeah. Great.
So we've talked in the past about async a lot, but generally speaking, most of the time you look at async, the samples, the articles are usually in C#. And so Lucian Wyszyk over on the Microsoft languages team, he takes a look at async and explains what this means really for a Visual Basic developer, because some of the syntax is a little bit different.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stuff coming in VB11 and, you know, obviously support for async type. And one of the big things that he calls out is making sure they're he's heard feedback from VB developers that they want every feature that C# developers have. Mm. So people aren't forced to make a language choice because they need a particular feature.
Right.
And they have. So they've added things like iterator. So, the yield keyword being built in. So if I'm building something where I'm iterating and then returning a single item, it's built in. Everything that's built into Windows 8 works across Visual mm-hmm. Basic. One of the coolest parts is VB Core. So what VB Core is, people are probably familiar with the Visual Basic runtime, where you had to include the I think it was Microsoft.VisualBasic as opposed to, say, system.blah. But that runtime library, which has things like
classes,
cint and, you know, conversions and a bunch of other helper classes and stuff like that, causing a dependency for that made it difficult to port, have Visual Basic apps for XNA. Have Visual Basic apps for all these different platforms. So what they've done is actually built VB Core, which is most of those features are now available, and it's actually something that you can inject into your library, inject directly into your project. So rather than the framework team for XNA or the framework team for Windows Phone or the framework team for whoever having to rebuild those features, they can now, it's just inserted in your library and it's part of your application package.
Right. It just spits the right MSIL and you're done.
Exactly. So, yeah. You should definitely read his go through, because there's a number of other features. And one of the ones I really like as well is just the removal of the forced by val. Like before, the IDE would always tell you, like, if you're doing a function that takes, you know, two values and returns them, it would say by val. Mm. And it was just kind of annoying and almost noisy. Mm-hmm. So he actually goes in and talks about how that is an IDE change. And there's just so much coming in Visual Basic 11. Definitely, if you're a VB developer, this is like a must read.
Right. Okay. Cool. And J#, we'll cover that later. Yeah. J# in Visual Studio 11. So Sean Wildermuth always has some really great posts, and this one he talks specifically about WinRT and XAML binding errors. What is this all about?
So if you're say building a VB C# project and you have some XAML binding error, meaning let's say for example I'm referencing something and I don't have the right path to a particular property where it should be, you know, I think I'm here but I'm actually somewhere else on the tree. Right, in terms of where the actual path I'm writing out. You wouldn't actually know what was going wrong, and it was sometimes difficult to find out what the actual binding error was. So with this tip, and this is actually Tim Heuer, another friend of the show, answering in Stack Overflow, because in C++, this is actually turned on by default, but it isn't turned on for other languages. So basically follow this tip, and what it allows you to do is see what the actual XAML binding error is, and you have a screenshot, you can see kind of the in the top corner there and the arrow for the thing to turn on there. So enable unmanaged code
debugging.
Boom.
Got it. Boom goes the dynamite. So speaking of Metro style applications, you know, everyone knows that we have this marketplace that you can publish into, and that's how consumers can get your applications. But oftentimes if you're in an enterprise environment, you don't necessarily want to publish an application to the world. that's going to show up in the Microsoft Store. Instead, you just want to publish it and make it possible for people within your organization to download it, install it on Windows 8 as a Metro style application. So a good example would be, you know, Microsoft has this shuttle service known as the Connector. I use it to get to and from work every day.
Yes.
And so they want to have an application that people that ride the Connector can use. But it's only applicable to people that work at Microsoft, so it wouldn't make any sense for my mom to download it. And so this article is by Lee Stott over in the Windows team. He actually takes you through the official way that you can do sideloading of applications in Windows 8.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Great. Love it.
Sounds good. Ship it. All right. So speaking of, I don't know.
Windows phone apps. Yes. Mobility.
Yes. So... So we talked about the new kind of lower profile, lower power devices that are coming with Windows Phone 7.1.1 SDK, being able to target that. And so as you start targeting lower cost devices, it's especially important that you make sure that you're focusing on things like app startup time. Because if you're running your apps on, you know, a Nokia Lumia 900 phone, super excited to get my hands on one of those, you may have a very different experience when you then take the same app and you try to load it on one of these lower memory or lower processor phones. And so this article actually takes you through the ways in which your app is started up and offers some suggestions for how you can improve the startup time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to start faster?
Yeah, exactly.
And even perceived startup time.
Yeah, no, that's true. If you get to the point that you've got a screen that at least shows some information that may be useful, even if the rest of the app isn't functional yet because it's still loading.
So the user knows something's happening.
Exactly. I really like Pulse, by the way. I don't know if you use Pulse.
Pulse, Brian Keller introduced me to that.
Oh, right. So what I like about that is it actually prefetches the news articles for you. So you're not like pressing a news article and then waiting for it to go download it.
Yeah.
You actually
But you do have to turn that background service on.
I may have said it allow or something like that.
Yeah,
but I didn't actually explicitly go in and turn anything on.
Yeah. It'll ask you.
Yeah.
So one of my favorite things is obviously IDE tips and tricks. So this one, you know, it's powerful debugging tricks, but a lot of these are pretty well known, but you'll be surprised how many people don't know them, right? So things, for example, like that you can just use your mouse to hover over when you're on a breakpoint to be able to see what a value of something is. You can also click it and change the value. You can also type in, you know, people that aren't familiar with the command window. So like, hey, I already have this class built. Let me call the method and say dot log and see if it actually logs a message. And you get IntelliSense in that window as well. People that don't know, for example, like go to definition, F12. Or my favorite one, which I've now gotten to control minus, which is when you navigate to something to be able to jump back. So navigate, jump back, control minus.
When you say
minus.
Navigate, you mean like go to?
Go to definition.
Okay,
I defined a class, and now I'm seeing the definition of the class. But you know, it was buried in here on file number 10.
Yep.
Control minus.
Cool. That's great.
And a bunch of other things for Visual Studio. So yeah.
Nice.
If you're using Visual Studio, just scan through it. It's a wonderful visual guide for those.
Nice. Brings us to Picks of the
Week.
So my pick of the week, it's just has to warm your heart. This is the Windows Phone proposal. And so so we actually heard about this a few weeks ago, and Laura went out and filmed this great video.
Laura Foy.
Laura Foy, that's right. And she went out and filmed this video. Basically what the guy did is he wrote his own custom app and he sideloaded it. And he used that as the vehicle with which to propose to his girlfriend. And so it kind of took him through all the different memories of their life.
So
but
cool.
But this couple, they're just so earnest. It's just, aww. I mean, they just look so good together. And they were brought together by Windows Phone, which you got to love that.
Yeah, I think my favorite line in the video is, what kind of girl wouldn't want a proposal via Windows Phone?
Exactly.
Just awesome.
So that's cool. And congratulations, you two crazy kids.
So my pick of the week is K-Motion Capture. So the idea behind this is 3D Max is something that allows you to have 3D models. And what K-Motion Capture does, it captures your motions via Kinect and then applies that via script to your 3D Max, right? So let's say, you know, I'm moving my arms like a robot, and then all of a sudden I apply it to the Homer Simpson model and mesh, and now the Homer Simpson model and mesh is following my motions.
So it's like, I mean, like game studios, movie studios, they like spend millions of dollars on motion capture studios
and
with the little
things,
balls.
Yeah.
That this is like you can do it for free now at home.
Yes.
Well, with a Kinect and a PC.
And 3D Max.
You know what I'm thinking, Dan?
What are you thinking?
I'm thinking K motion capture being used to record a wedding proposal.
Ah, by a 3D model?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. That's ultimate geeky.
That's so, horrible.
Something for people at home to play with. And we will see you next week.
Thanks.